Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio. This is your host, Danny, and this is a very, very special episode. I know everybody's been hype about the Xbox Games Showcase. And for this episode, we have a very cool surprise. We're going to be talking about the first narrative expansion for The Outer Worlds, and we're going to talk about it here, only on Gamertag Radio. So enjoy this interview, and please let me know your thoughts. All right, and stay tuned because we have more surprises here on Gamertag Radio. So stay tuned.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
Hi, my name is Carrie Patel. I'm game director and narrative co-lead on The Outer Worlds, Peril on Gorgon.
And I am Matt Hansen. I am the art director on Outer Worlds, Peril on Gorgon.
Yeah, so the content of the DLC slots in with the rest of the base game. You can access that content anytime between completing the Monarch Crit Path and your point of no return save on Tartarus. So unless you deleted that save, you should, even for a character that you completed the game with, you should still have a system generated auto save just before you get locked into the Tartarus end game, and you can pick up from there.
All right, let's talk about the story. What's this expansion all about?
So Peril on Gorgon is sort of a pulp noir take on the Outer Worlds. It's set on the Gorgon asteroid, which is the site of a now defunct Spacer's Choice research facility where Adrenatime was developed and manufactured. And through the course of Peril on Gorgon, you're going to be exploring this place, delving into all the filthy corporate secrets there, and learning some pretty big information that actually has really shaped life in Halcyon. And then in classic Obsidian fashion, deciding what to do with that. Hansen, do you have something you want to add there?
Outside of what you mentioned, there's a lot of opportunities for players to expand upon their experience on base game as well. Carrie kind of touched on how we're feeding the player a great deal of information that they've maybe already had hinted to in base game and kind of exploring the bigger outcomes of that. But in addition to that, you're also seeing how your companions are going to react to those things. Especially for a couple of your companions, the stuff hits really close to home. And they can bring a lot of pathos to the story we're trying to tell, and a bit of humor as well.
Are we going to see returning characters from the previous game too? From the main base game? Or like a new story from them too, or not?
So you will have more content with your companions, again, as Matt said, as you explore the Gorgon story with them. But we have developed a cast of entirely new characters for the Peril on Gorgon DLC that you'll meet both on Gorgon as well as at a few other locations that take you back to some base game settings, but into new levels there.
Yeah, and I noticed there is going to be a new level cap now for you, right? So that means more difficult areas, like enemies and everything too, right?
Yep, absolutely. So we're looking at content that's going to start you at about level 25 and go up from there. So it's definitely late game content. And some of that stuff is really challenging. So it's important for us to allow the players to kind of grow a little bit and provide them with fun new gameplay opportunities that comes with, you know, new skill unlocks, new perks, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, what about weapons? Because that's one of the highlights of the main game, right? So it's going to be a lot of new weapons too, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sorry, go ahead, Carrie.
No, I was just going to say we do have several new weapons as well as increased tiers for a lot of our existing weapons. And we're especially excited about three new science weapons, one of which you'll be able to see in the trailer when it launches. And I think players will be able to recognize which one that is.
Yeah. So what was it like while working on this expansion that you wanted to try to do new things in this that wasn't in the original game?
So from a story perspective, there were a few details that are kind of hinted at in the base game, but not fully explored. And so we saw this as an opportunity to further develop the story of Halcyon, and to, you know, further refine the lens of like how this place has gotten to be the way it is. And also ask the question of, you know, what do you do with a situation like this? Is there a way to pull it back from the brink? Can you fix what's broken here? Mm-hmm. From a systems angle, one new feature that we're pretty excited about is the portable phonographs, which is our take on audio logs. That's given us another way to kind of tell the player the story of this place, especially since, you know, many of Gorgon's original habitants are dead, gone, or who knows what. So this is another way for us to introduce character voice, storytelling, and just enhance the mystery that we're building in this DLC. Yeah. And Matt Hansen's art team did some pretty cool stuff with the visual look of those as well.
Oh, you can tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. So obviously with something like audio logs, that's kind of a high-tech feeling thing. We didn't want to have something that felt like, you know, a handheld audio recorder of today or even of the 80s, right? So what we did is we created something that looks a bit like a wax cylinder player, but it's all handheld. So it's a combination of sort of that wax cylinder player recorder and also, you know, the old crank telephones where you have the mouthpiece you hold. So they're fun little boxes that you can kind of find all around the world and feel immersed in that audio experience.
Yeah. If you like to compare to this planet on the previous ones, that when it comes to like that danger feeling and the enemies and the environment, which one you compare this to out of all the planets in the game?
Ooh, that is a tough one. I think we kind of went in a slightly different direction than a lot of them, but I think the closest comparison I would say is to something like the Monarch Wilds, where it's an area that feels like it's been overgrown a little bit by less civilized inhabitants. It's predominantly run over by marauders and by wildlife, as well as some enterprising smugglers and scrappers that are kind of trying to make some good bank on the ruins.
Yeah, well, when I play this game already three times, I have like different endings on this. So now that I'm going to start playing this new expansion, that also affects like the story from that too, or it's like starting from scratch? Because everybody's going to have different stories from like their endings of the original base game.
Yeah, so I would think of this as sort of like the experience that you have anytime you go to a new location in the Outer Worlds, like Monarch or like Roseway. You know, the story, these places have stories that are more or less self-contained in terms of the events that like take place over the course of that content, but they do reflect on and have larger implications for the rest of the setting. So, you know, when you go to Gorgon, you know, you will, no matter what kind of choices you have been making up to that point in the base game, you will be able to access that content and have a full experience. The choices you make over the course of that content and at the end, you will see played out in front of you, you know, in kind of the main story of Gorgon, and then in slide reactivity at the very end of the game.
What happened if a gamer that's been playing this and they only probably unlocked like maybe two characters as a companion, right? Now with this expansion, is that going to be available for them to go back and maybe meet those new companions that were available in the original game, but they just missed the opportunity to unlock them? Is that possible too, or no?
Yeah, the way you play Gorgon, it's, you don't have to, you're still playing it as part of the base game. You know, you're not like loading into a separate area, like the first Dragon Age expansion, for instance. You can seamlessly transition between the Gorgon content and the base game content. You can start, do a few Gorgon quests, and then jump back into stuff in the base game, and that'll all be seamless.
Mm. What was it that you guys learned from working on the main game and this, in your opinion, when it comes to like narrative, story, the companions, levels, what was it that you think that you learned from that?
I think one big thing, and this is a pretty big thing that we try to carry forward in a lot of the games that we make as Obsidian, you know, because we do focus on these, you know, kind of story-focused RPGs where we give the player lots of freedom and choice in how they direct the story and also how they get through the content, is just to remain to embrace the possibility of all the things players may want to do, and to be proactive about offering the player opportunities to engage with the content at their pace and in their own choosing. I'm especially proud of what the team pulled off with a couple pretty big things that the player can do to kind of try to push some of the content off the rails. I think, you know, by anticipating and planning for that stuff early, we were really able to fold it well into the story, so that even players who get pretty experimental with some of the stuff they do are still going to have a good experience.
Oh, yeah. Just to add on to what Carrie's saying there, I mean, I think one of the most important things with this title and with any Obsidian title, right, is that we allow players to play out the type of fantasy that they want to be a part of. We allow them to play the role that they want to play. And specifically with Gorgon, one of the things that we wanted to kind of emphasize from the Outer Worlds was this desire in a lot of players to kind of play this sly spacer character, you know, almost a Han Solo-esque kind of vibe. And so by pushing it towards some noir tones and a little bit more intrigue, we've allowed for even more expansion on that kind of fantasy as well.
So when the game came out last year, were you guys reading the social media, the reaction from people, right, about the story and just their feedback about the game? Was there anything that surprised you? You think that you were like, man, I can't wait for them to play the expansion.
Oh boy. I would say personally, at least, the expansion wasn't like super far along when we started to get that feedback. So there wasn't anything that we're doing right now that we were like, oh man, they're going to love this if they liked that. But we were able to look at a lot of that stuff and emphasize that in the expansion. It was actually a really great timing opportunity for us to see what's resonating with people, what can we do more of that will really satisfy our fans. And that's been really great. I mean, you know, personally, one of the things that really was heartening for me was to see kind of the outpouring of excitement of, you know, inclusivity in the game. There's a lot of characters that players could see themselves in. And that's something that, you know, is a tremendously important thing that we need to be considering. And seeing just how much some of those characters resonated with players allowed us to go, great, we can do more of this and serve even more of our community that way.
What about you, Carrie?
Yeah, I think Matt put it really well. You know, I'll say I'm always interested to see how much some players pay attention to the small details, you know, and how much even the things that we feel like we've buried kind of deep or just sort of hinted at, players will pick up on and run with and, you know, develop these theories about. And in some cases, you know, there's a sense of like, oh, wow, I never thought about it that way, but that's a very interesting take on it. And then sometimes it's like, oh my gosh, they actually almost have it. Like, wow, yeah, that's pretty sharp. So,
One of the things that I love about this game, besides the story, is I felt like the gameplay hours was like perfect for someone that like me, that I don't have enough time to be playing games for like 100 hours, right? But I think 25 hours, 30 was like perfect for me, right? So for the expansion, what is like the, in your opinion, game length wise, is it going to be around there? Is it shorter or what?
So it's definitely shorter than the full game experience of base game. I would say the entirety of our DLC, including some stuff that takes you off the Gorgon asteroid, is about the same play length as the Monarch play experience from start to finish. While the Gorgon asteroid itself is a little smaller than the Monarch overlands, it's a little closer to Roseway. All of the dungeons and off-world content that we're introducing as well makes it a pretty similar play experience.
Okay. Now, my last question, actually. I noticed this is right now for PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Are we going to see anything in the future for the Switch version too? Because there's people that actually play that for the first time to Outer Worlds.
Yeah, that is planned. We just don't have a date yet.
Okay. All right, cool. Anything else? Anything else that you would like to talk about the expansion that we haven't mentioned here during the conversation? And they're stuck.
Well, there's just so much. We're introducing so many things that, you know, not only we as developers wanted to look at, but we as players of the game and fans of our own franchise, even if that's a little weird, have wanted to see more of. And so to nail it down to just a couple of things is really tough. I think for me, one of the things that I'm most excited for people to see are, you know, we took a lot of our environmental spaces and really pushed them to the next limit. We've introduced a lot of spatial verticality in our overlands. There are sort of aspirational spaces that you can see right away when you land that you won't get to for a little while because they're up on a cliff or whatever. And so coming back to that stuff is always really rewarding. That's one thing that I've always really loved with you know, some of those larger open world games like Skyrim, where you can see way off in the distance a giant statue or like, I want to get there. Breath of the Wild did that really well as well. So getting to introduce some of that stuff is really exciting for me.
Oh, Carrie, you were going to say something?
Oh, no, I was just going to echo. Yeah, the art team and the design team did a fantastic job of working together to ensure that, you know, the aesthetics of the space and the visual presentation, you know, work to help pull the player along and, you know, tease the cool content that players are going to experience. Without getting too specific about it, I think another thing I'm excited about that we really tried to be thoughtful about was how to let the external threat intrude on the player's experience in a way that doesn't lock them into content, because I know, you know, a big part of kind of the design philosophy around the Outer Worlds and a lot of our games is, you know, we don't really want to backgate the players into a specific moment, especially if players are not explicitly opting into it. You know, but at the same time, that can create a world that feels very static when everything's just waiting for you to show up. So I think we found some pretty cool solutions around that to make sure that players feel the threat around them while still being in control of the pacing of the game.
I know you both of you mentioned about Outer Logs. Is this just like hidden all over the place, or is this like stuff that's like easy to find? Because, you know, I like to find stuff, you know. Take me a while to...
There's definitely a mix. There are some that will be pretty apparent and obvious. Some of those are, you know, critical to the quest line and stuff like that. But there are also a lot that are kind of hidden in weird ways and Easter eggy ways. There's even a sub quest line where you have to go and seek out some of them. So
interesting. Why these audio logs is so important though, in your thing, for like narrative wise, like why is it important?
So part of it is, you know, the story of the Gorgon asteroid is a facility that was abandoned at a certain point. You know, the challenge for us is to how to tell the story of what happened in this place and how things went wrong and what that was like. And we have a lot, you know, some of our tools obviously are environment art and the visual presentation. You know, we don't have a lot of NPCs in some of these more hostile areas for reasons that will be obvious when players play the DLC. So the question is like, okay, well, what do we have at our fingertips? We have notes, we have terminals, you know, things like that players can read. But there's something about an audio log where you're hearing a character's voice, you're getting the effect of a great VO performance, and you can tell a story that is a little bit shorter and a little more character focused, and also something that the player can hear and experience ambiently as they're wandering around the world. So it was really just about expanding our palette of options for how to tell a story, especially in locations where it wouldn't make sense to have a lot of NPCs.
So finding these audio logs, it will unlock a lot of just side quests to learn more about the locations, right? And also about that person that's speaking in an audio log, right?
I mean, I wouldn't quite describe them as like a, you know, a quest, an Easter egg quest hunt or anything. There are a few audio logs that are connected to one particular quest. And then there are a lot of audio logs that are scattered around the world as flavor, you know, kind of like the notes players can find. And just like, you know, you're exploring an interesting corner of the world and like, oh my gosh, here's a body, but it's not in a place I expected to find it. And there's like either a note or an audio log with them. And so just part of telling that story ambiently alongside, you know, visuals and asset placement and everything else.
For both of you, my last question is, out of all companions, which one do you think was like your favorite character, your favorite companion, right? But are any of them change within the expansion? Like maybe stories or conversations or their attitude, you know? We have a couple characters that are very... They love to look for trouble in some note, you know, but so what you think?
Well, my favorite, I think, has always been Felix. Natai Padar did an amazing job with him. I find him to be such an entertaining and endearing character. And actually he is someone who experiences some pretty interesting growth over the course of the DLC. And I think what you identified about him being someone who mm-hmm. likes to look for trouble is yes. pretty key to his personality. And I think something that he comes to be a bit more introspective about over the course of the DLC.
Interesting. Okay, good to know. What about you, Matt?
So for me personally, I'm a huge fan of Parvati.
That's my favorite. She's my favorite.
Yeah, she brings a level of, I would say, emotional introspection and maturity to the game.
Yes.
That you really see come to the forefront on Gorgon. She has some really, really, you know, personal emotional ties to the results of what has gone on here. Mm-hmm. And you get to explore that pretty fully with her over the course of the DLC.
So it's important to choose the right companions if you want to know more about them, right? For the new expansion, right? Because that means that every time I'm going to play with a new companion, the story is going to change and you will learn more about them, right? So, okay. So it looks like I'm going to play it again all over again, right? Multiple times. Yeah, multiple times. Yeah, cool. Now, but I just want to say thanks for the interview. And yeah, so this game, the expansion comes out when?
September 9th.
September 9th. There you go. For Xbox, PlayStation 4, and PC. No dates for Nintendo Switch. Hopefully in the future. That's it. All right, but thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, cool.
Thanks, Danny.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, so we're going to wrap it up here at Gamertag Radio. Thank you for listening. And remember, send us your thoughts, your feedback to fanmail at Gamertag Radio or give us a call, 76-273-7GTR. That's 76-273-7GTR. I know a lot of people are listening to this. Most likely already watch the Xbox Games Showcase. And a lot of people are going to be sending us voice messages, emails, everything about their thoughts. Please send it. We're going to save that for a future episode of GTR. We're going to be creating a lot of content for you from the showcase. So we have a couple surprises coming up. So stay tuned. Until next time, this is Danny. I'm out.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.